Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hey, everybody. This is the Best Ever You show with Elizabeth Hamilton and...
Katie Eastman.
See, I thought you were going to be silent there for a minute. Too funny. You know, I've decided I think I need that lady's voice, that Blog Talk Radio. It's funny. What do you think? You think I should sign up for that job? Audition?
You know, I don't know.
I hear silence there, too. I'm thinking no. Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, this time we have a guest. I'm proud of that. Aren't you?
Yeah, I am, too. I'm very excited because talking for a solid hour was, like, a real challenge.
We did it, though.
We did. And we covered just about everything from the kitchen sink to double dipping to you name it. We did a good job.
Yeah. Well, she's here. She, Mrs. International, Shannon Devine, has informed me that she has pulled over to the side of the road, has good cell phone reception, and is eating ice cream. How can you eat ice cream, Shannon?
You were not supposed to tell that on live radio here. That was my secret. It's Chick-fil-A ice cream, and it's quite delicious. You know, it's starting to turn fall here, so when you say how do you do that, I guess you mean the weather, right? How do you eat ice cream in the weather?
Yeah, no,
no, it's how do you
no,
keep
no,
your
no,
hair? You're Mrs. International.
Well, the answer is quite simple. With as busy as my schedule is and chasing Little Miss Magic around, I think the calories just find themselves out the, you know, they just drift away, hopefully. Well, we'll see. Maybe I won't go through the drive-thru another time this week. You've got to live a little, you know?
Yeah. So, all right. So, Mrs. International, this is a really, really big deal. And people can see you at MrsInternational.com if they want to go to that website and so forth. But can you tell us and the viewer, or the, not the viewers, the listeners, a little bit about what Mrs. International is, how you got the title, and so forth?
Absolutely. And they can also find and follow what each queen is doing, Mrs., Miss, and Teen, on the International Pageants with an S .blogspot.com. It's a kind of a new thing this year where as queens we submit, Ashley, myself, and Juliana, we submit blogs, two blogs a week about things that are going on and appearances we're making or, you know, what's going on in the life of Mrs. International. So that's another way that people can follow. But basically, when I tell people what, you know, what is Mrs. International? Who is Mrs. International? It is a family affair. And if you visit the website, you'll see that tagline, and that was one thing that really caught my eye about the system, is it is a family affair. And being a married woman, you know, it doesn't mean you have to be Mrs. Cunningham and just stop all that you're doing. We are still, as married women, we are involved in our communities. We are making strides. We are, I mean, women do amazing things these days. I've always said, and I actually had this question in an interview one time. I was asked, how do you feel about men and women as far as women becoming equal with men and the job force, et cetera, and so on? And I just simply took a deep breath and I said, well, in my opinion, a woman who seeks to be equal to a man simply lacks ambition. So I, you know, again, I just think it's a, it is a system that empowers women and it gives them a voice and, you know, an entire year to stand on a platform and to talk about that. And there's just so much in my heart and so much passion about adoption. And Hallie Grace has just totally transformed my life. And I'm not going to cry during this radio. Every time I talk about her, I want to cry. I mean, she just has that effect. Aww. She sprinkles her little magic dust, even when she's not around. But I wanted to help other women. And, you know, I'm sure we'll probably get into this as the interview goes on. But I wanted to open myself up and to talk about things that maybe I've never had a chance to talk about and just help people to get through that adoption journey. And so that's what Mrs. International is. It's a family affair. It's for women who want to change life, want to help other people and celebrate themselves and their families.
And to be in that, to be in it, it's married women. Is there a certain age that you can or can't be? And what do you compete in?
It's 21 to 56. It's the age range. And the competition phases include the private interview, which is the very first time you meet the panel of judges, and that's 50% of the score. And then you compete in evening gown with your husband, which is the most glamorous part. And one of the that's one of the greatest parts. You know, I remember competing on finals night, and then the wing, Ashley Pavlicek, who is Mrs. California, her husband Paul is a hoot. And he was over on the other wing just dancing and carrying on. So you get to see the husband's personalities as, you know, this is going on. And then obviously walking out on stage in evening gown was by far the best part of the evening for me, because Halle Grace had, well, you know, in the opening number she yelled for me, and then fitness she yelled for me, but it's a little faster. But then when she saw Mommy and Daddy on stage, she was just, that's my mommy, that's my mommy. And everybody in there knew exactly who she was. So the evening gown portion is very glamorous, and it's a time for you to just celebrate your marriage, and you know, it's just a really special time. And then, like I said, there's the fitness portion, and that is where you don't have to wear a bikini. You wear a, you know, a fitness outfit. You know, they're one piece or two piece, so you've got the option there. And other than that, it's just you know, you're competing with yourself, being the best that you can be, and just hoping for the best outcome.
Yeah, let's go back to the bikini part for a minute. We talked about you on the radio last week because I've been with you at a national pageant in 2006 at the Mrs. United States pageant, which you also won. So you've won the biggies. And I remember this moment with you where I'm standing there in a swimming dress with nylons and heels, you know, and all but a hat on, and you know, a whatever. And I remember me coming up to you going, I'm just going to stand next to you because you're going to win. you're in shape, you're beautiful, you're smart. Everything about you is just, yeah, you are just one of my favorites. So anyway, well, I'm glad. Congratulations on winning this pageant. It's a really big deal. It's not just a pageant, though. It feels almost like a job.
It is a job, and I was going to, before we go into that, I was going to say you're one of my favorites as well, and you've been so supportive of me through the years, and I mean, I just love you, and you know that, so.
Thank you. Yeah, I love you too, so.
I love you.
Yep. I love you.
Yes, it is a job. It is a job of service, and I think that that's one thing really important. That's a key that all women who are thinking about becoming Mrs. International, or, you know, every woman has different goals. Some women aspire to be Mrs. Texas or Mrs. California or, you know, whatever state, and that is their goal. They want to be that state title holder, and that's a wonderful goal to have. And there's other women who aspire to, I want to be Mrs. International, and I would be, you know, not telling the truth if I said, oh, I just wanted to go and have fun. Yes, I wanted to have fun, but I also wanted to win. I knew that it was a job of service. And so I've been incredibly busy ever since winning. There's been media interviews. I have been to California. I've been to Tennessee. We're going to Virginia this weekend. My schedule is booked the entire month of November, just about, because it's National Adoption Month. December, I get a little bit of break, but, you know, there's holiday events. And then we start to gear up for Go Red, and I'll be in New York on National Wear Red Day, that's hard to say, on February 4th, which is the day after my birthday. And then I'll be involved in the Heart Gala that's going to be at the NASCAR Hall of Fame in Charlotte, North Carolina. And let's see, what else? In May, there's the Go Red Luncheon. Oh, good. I'm sorry.
And I was going to say the whole Go Red thing. Your platform is adoption, but the Go Red part is the Mrs. International's platform that they support at more of a national level, correct? So you don't have to have your, like, go ahead, whatever you were going to say.
No, you go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is as a contestant in the Mrs. International program, you don't have to have your platform go red necessarily to win that pageant or anything like that. You could have a pageant of adoption like you have and win, but they do have expect their queen to do things on behalf of the Go Red organization. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And you are correct. And that's the beauty of the entire thing. And, no, you do not have to have Go Red as your personal platform. However, I think it's so important that women are aware that heart disease is the number one killer, and it takes a woman every minute. Every minute a woman is taken by heart disease, which that statistic alone is just mind-boggling.
That's because we are so busy taking care of everybody else. I swear. And aren't the signs of heart disease in women different than men? Like in women, they're almost undetectable.
They are very different.
Yeah,
they're very different. You know, it's not always the tingling arm sensation, et cetera. But that is one thing I just love about the international system. Of course, my platform is adoption, building families through the miracle of adoption. But, you know, there's so many things that you can be passionate about and you can have a voice for. I don't know if you've been following along, but this spring was a very hard time for my family. I lost my cousin, who was a year older than I am. And so, in my opinion, she was very young. And I lost her on March 14th to breast cancer. And then 3 weeks later, I lost my grandmother to breast cancer. And so, with October being National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, it gives my family the opportunity to really be involved. And we've started Angela's Army, and we're marching for a cure. And I know that's Miss International's platform, Ashley. And so I'm sure she's going to be really busy this month as well. But there's so many things. I mean, advocating for children, being a guardian ad litem, and, you know, working with the National Council for Adoption. I mean, there's just so many things that you're allowed to do and so many doors that will open if you'll just allow yourself to, you know, knock and walk through. You'd be amazed at what you can do. And I'm very excited to get involved and more involved with Go Red. I have been in touch with Monica at the national office. And also in Charlotte, they have a pretty large chapter there, if you want to call it that. And we had a meeting last week, and, you know, things are just going really, really well. Very busy. I really don't know how I do it all. Work full-time. I'm Miss International. I'm mom to Miss Magic. I don't know where poor Jason's sitting in these days. But, you know, I'm just very blessed. I just thank God every day for the opportunity. And, you know, I remember Mary Richardson saying one thing to me, and she said, you know, Shannon, this year is going to fly by, and you're going to be sitting here next July, and you're going to think, you know, what did I do with my year? And those were amazing words because it put me on the track right away. I thought, I'm going to make the best of this year. And I really, really hope that I do, and I hope that I can inspire others. And if nothing else, if I can know that I helped a family who was struggling like Jason and I were, you know, through our adoption, then I'll know that my job has been, you know, complete. And I can pass it on to the next woman, and it'll just continue on. So.
And I think, Katie, you both share such common ground with adoption. I hope you guys, I'm going to be silent now and let you guys chat about adoption.
Well, I think when Shannon and I came together and we wrote this article for Best Ever You magazine about being what we called elephant moms, because when you adopt, you take a long time to give birth from your heart, is the way we describe it, and elephants gestate for a very long time. So we nicknamed ourselves the elephant moms, and we bonded immediately about all of the ups and downs. And what really strikes me about what Shannon is saying, which is really quite remarkable, I mean, the part I can't get past, first of all, is your husband being up on stage. Mine tripped just coming off of when we got married, just coming down from the podium. And, you know, and I just, you guys talking about being in a pageant, I kind of was like, huh? But the wonderful thing that I can really relate to, that everyone can relate to, is Shannon's passion for something she really believes in. And that's really what adoption's all about. It's about wanting to have a child, no matter what. And that's what it takes. And I think that Shannon can speak to that. She's obviously speaking to that in terms of being in pageants, and I know that about you, Elizabeth. But it's about, you know, if you want to be a mom, you can be a mom. You just have to find a way to be a mom if your body isn't going to cooperate. And so,
right.
Shannon, can you speak to that?
Oh, goodness, absolutely. I don't even know where to begin to speak to that. But, you know, like I said, there were things that I was silent about for so long. And my hope today is that maybe someone is listening that is maybe going through the same thing or walking the same path. And I cannot tell you how many times, even in 2006 when Elizabeth and I were talking about competing, I remember the swimsuit competition. What I remember more than anything when people make, they would make comments about, oh, your body, you've never been pregnant, you, and I'm sitting there dying inside because that wasn't the truth. And, you know, after failed attempts and so many heartbreaks and so many losses and crying yourself to sleep at night, and there were even times that whenever I would conceive, I wouldn't even share that with my family members who I share everything with because I thought, what's going to happen now? And I always blamed myself. I thought, what am I doing wrong? Why am I being punished? And I had all of these fears and anxieties. And I can tell you, when we decided, you know, I woke up one day and I thought, okay, Lord, I get it. You want me to adopt. There were just I mean, it would take 3 hours for me to tell the whole story, but I've got 3 hours if you like. But
we can schedule more calls.
You're
we're
like,
good. Keep going.
But no. So there was just this long path of you know, internal struggle and finding out who I really was and what, you know, what my destiny was all about. And there were a couple signs and that led us to adopt from Vietnam. We had failed domestic adoption attempts. We even went through an adoption scam, which was like a roller coaster ride that crashes at the end. Just so many things. But what you said, Katie, is so true. If you want to be a mother, if you want to give a child a home, you can do it. It's not the easiest thing. It is not a process. It is a journey. And the journey doesn't always have a rainbow at the beginning. You know, there's going to be storms and there's going to be lots of rain. And you just have to I guess, stick with it. And I know for a fact that God put me on this path because he knew what was going to happen. He knew about how Grace's situation and her orphanage. He knew that country was shutting down. He knew that, you know, 44-plus children probably were not going to have a home. And I guess I had enough, if you want to call it passion, Jason called it psychosis at times, but I guess I was so daggone determined to be a mother, I would not stop at anything. I called the congressman every single day. I called, bless his heart, Congressman McHenry, Patrick McHenry, if you're listening from D.C., you're the best. You are the best. You should run for president. This man, he made it a personal issue, and he helped us. I Skyped him. I magic jacked him. You name it, from Vietnam every single day. And he is really was instrumental in bringing these children home. But I truly believe if I wouldn't have had all the struggles leading up to Hallie Grace's adoption, maybe I would have been afraid to say, you know what, United States government, I don't care that you said no. I'm going anyway. And that's what I did. I left the country without an I-600 approval. I left without a visa. I signed a waiver saying I won't come back for 2 years or until she receives a visa. And, you know, maybe if I wouldn't have went through all that I went through, I wouldn't have been to the point where I would have just said, you know, here I go. I'm out of here. So everything happens for a reason, and I'm so glad. I mean, you know, nobody wants to say I'm so glad I went through so many struggles, but I really am, because I wouldn't have Hallie Grace, and she is just, you guys have to meet her in person. She's just amazing.
She is so cute.
Mm. Yeah, she's cute. She's the cutest thing ever.
Yeah, absolutely. Katie, can you talk a little bit about what you went through? Also,
yeah, I think the biggest hardest thing for me has been, well, it took, once we made the decision that we were going to adopt, it took us 5 minutes to figure out, we went online to figure out where and how, and we immediately just chose China, and for a number of reasons. But the hardest part was, as you described, Shannon, the ups and the downs and the things that fall through. And oh my gosh, you want to be a mother so badly, you want to wake up tomorrow pregnant, but you can't, and you know, and you don't even know when it's going to happen, and that is really, really difficult. And I know there are a lot of people out there that go through that trying to become pregnant, and they don't know when they're going to be moms, but there's just a whole lot of red tape, and as Shannon described, that is very scary. And for us, I think the person who helped me, and I know, Shannon, you talked about this individual who helped you with the government. Well, interestingly enough, it was the governor's wife at the time here in Maine, Mary Herman, who had adopted internationally. And I will never forget what she said to me. She said, Katie, this is a roller coaster. You will be up, you will be down, and you will never know when you're going to turn the next corner, what it's going to bring. But if you hang on for dear life, and you just keep going, at the end, it's worth it. And that's exactly what it feels like. It's up, it's down, it's around a corner. You find out, oh, my God, there's SARS in China. And so all of a sudden, we were told that we would probably have to wait another year. And we'd already waited two because of SARS. And then a month later, oh, no, you're leaving in 2 weeks. So it's the unpredictability. And then all of a sudden you find out you're leaving in 2 weeks and you have a job and you have home. And so what? You got to go. You got to go when you're called. And so there's just a whole lot of – there's just not much predictability about it. And you never know at the end what's going to be there. But
so,
just like
– Oh, yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean – I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second. Just say to both of you – Shannon, maybe you could go first, so because I can't see you guys. What is the difference? Let's say we want to adopt a child. What is the difference between adopting a child in the United States versus overseas? Why do people go overseas to adopt children versus adopt right here in the United States? Just curious.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are differences between domestic adoption and international adoption, just like there are different countries. You know, Katie adopted from China, we adopted from Vietnam. In the United States, there's also different routes of adoption. There's private adoption. There's, you can go through DSS to become a foster parent to adopt, like Rebecca McGrady did, a former Mrs. International. Have you seen her little girls?
Yeah,
oh,
adorable.
My goodness, they're absolutely precious. So, you know, there are different routes. And honestly, my answer is this. Because of what we had already been through, the losses, the, you know, like I described, I knew that being a foster parent, I mean, those people, they need a gold medal. Because, you know, as a CASA volunteer, as a guardian ad litem, I represent the children. And obviously, I interact with the foster parents. And, you know, you talk about being on the roller coaster ride. I mean, imagine at any point you get emotionally and you just attached to this child who's been placed in your home that, you know, has been either, you know, physically, they've been abused in some fashion. And the court system takes them right away and shuffles them back and forth and this and that and the other. And I just had a cousin of mine who went through a private adoption, and the child on the seventh day, whenever the, you know, the birth parents had the option to change their mind, baby was taken. And, you know, there are so many adoptions that go through beautifully, and there are adoptions that don't go through, so, you know, they don't have a happy ending for the adoptive parents. So at my time and in our situation and just the timing, international adoption for us was the avenue. Number one, we always wanted to give a child a home to a child from a third world country. And number two, I knew that I could not withstand another loss like that because, and you know, I'm not ashamed to say that whenever you go through that, it's a struggle. And I really thought they may have to put me in a mental institution. And I'm not making fun or poking fun, but when you go through so many losses like that, you just have to stand up one day and say, what else can I take? What else can I endure? And so that was my reason and our reason for going international. Now, our next adoption, who knows? Who knows what will happen?
Right. Is that similar? Would that be your response too, Katie? Fairly similar to that?
Absolutely. Exactly. And I think people who are thinking about adopting, the first thing they need to do is to find out about the laws in their own state around the mother's changing her mind. Some states you have 24 hours and she can change her mind. Other states they have 6 months to change their mind. So that's a huge factor and Shannon said it beautifully. I mean, the way I always describe it is with each loss, with each miscarriage, I lost a piece of my heart. I just didn't have anything left to go through it again. And that was why I just couldn't take the risk. And in our state, there's the time the mother has to change her mind is just far too long for me. And so I wasn't going to risk it.
Yeah, and I have an adopted brother. We don't even call him adopted. He's just the youngest of our family is adopted. And we already had, I don't know, I have to stop and count 9 or 10 children, and then my parents decided to adopt on top of that. Interesting. And my parents adopted a child with fetal alcohol syndrome. Interesting. Go ahead. What were you going to ask?
Well, I was going to say, you brought up a really good point, Elizabeth, and I think it's a point that Shannon and I would really like people to understand is that you don't even think about the fact that your brother's adopted anymore. And we both have internationally adopted children, and oftentimes people out of curiosity will say things to us and come up to us and comment about our children, and I welcome that, but sometimes they say things that make our children quite uncomfortable. And not because they're trying to be mean or anything, but it is rather humorous. But my daughter gets very uncomfortable when someone comes up out of the blue and says, "Are you going to play the violin?" Just because she's Chinese, And so there are just silly things like that people say. And, I know Shannon must have things like that too. But just to recognize we're a family. We're out there doing what you're doing. So what if our kid's from China? We're just like you. And I think that we forget that oftentimes people are looking at us differently because we don't think of ourselves as different. Is that something you could speak to, Shannon?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so many stories. Like you said, people say things and they don't think that it's hurtful. Now, I have had one encounter where this woman was extremely rude about how she thought Hallie Grace became my child, but we won't even go there. I let her know right away that what she said was inappropriate. But, I try to look at it as an educational moment, too, because sometimes I think people don't know what to say, and so they just say, they want to, they see that our children are absolutely beautiful, and they're probably thinking, this baby was in an orphanage. They want to address it in some way. They just don't know how. And the one thing that absolutely just really bothers me, and I shouldn't say bothers me because, I should, again, continue to educate, but everybody thinks that all Asians look the same or that they should look the same, and that really it blows my mind. I mean, for example, there are other children that, came from Hallie Grace's orphanage, and people will say, well, but their hair doesn't grow like hers, or their eyes are more, and I'm going to say the word, they say slanted, and I almost cringe. I mean, just like, don't use that kind of terminology. I mean, she has beautiful almond-shaped eyes. I mean, nobody comes up to me and says, oh, your eyes are so bug-eyed. What happened? You don't look like your mom. nobody says that. And so it's just knowing, what to say. And if there's a way that you can link the story that I wrote, The Sticks and Stones of Adoption, I tried to kind of, you know, put some things in there about what people say and can say in public, and even in your own family. And,
I was just going to say, if you walk up to your family, it could be very clear, like Katie, that, you know, Callie's adopted. If I walk up to your family and I don't know you, what is something, you know, I should say to you? Other than I just hugged the heck out of her. She's near me. If Hallie was near me, I'd hug the heck out of her, too. But, you know, I can't even think of what would come out of my mouth other than what a beautiful little girl.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. I mean, it shouldn't be treated any differently. You know, I've had people say, do you mind me asking you a question? And I'll say, sure. Go ahead. And they'll say, is she adopted? And I'll say, yes. And I'll say, oh, well, I have a couple of questions. And they'll legitimately have real questions that mean something. Now,
that's a good
if
thing
somebody
to say,
says, if somebody says, you know, is she adopted? And I'll say, yes. And say, oh, where's she adopted from? Vietnam. Well, do you know anything about her real parents? There's another one. I'm like, I am her real parent.
Yeah.
I am her mother. Are you talking about her birth mother? Okay,
yeah.
Her birth mother. Yeah, we'll talk about that. And then, you know, I'll say she was adopted from her orphanage. And then the next thing they'll say is, oh, no, that's so pitiful. What happened? Did her mom leave her? And then there you're going again. And you just want to say, hey, what happened. But if all of that wouldn't have happened, I wouldn't be her mother. And I'm so glad that all of that happened. And, you know, there are ways that we can choose to, I mean, it would make my day if somebody came up and asked those same questions and said, oh, isn't it just amazing how God's plan just works out so perfectly? I mean, you know, maybe they could say something like that, and it would just make your heart smile versus you having that uncomfortable situation. And Hallie Grace is so smart. I mean, she'll be 3 in November, but she is a smart cookie. And it's not going to be long until she's going to start repeating things and saying things that they say, because she already tells people that when she sees a pregnant woman, she'll tell them that mommy has a little belly, but mommy has a big heart. Because she already knows.
That's so cute.
So, and she'll try to pull my shirt up, you know, right in the middle of the grocery store. Mommy has a little baby. And so, you know, they're smart. And like you said, I mean, with Callie, I mean, she's at the age that she probably thinking, oh, brother, here we go again. And really and truly, I mean, America is such a melting pot. And, it has been for many years and will continue to be. And I just wish that we could get to a point where we look at family as not, you know, your typical, whatever somebody thinks is typical. I guess they would say my family is typical. Mom, dad, my mom gave birth to 2 girls. And so, you know, we grew up in the same house forever. I just wish that people would look at family as how people love one another, whether, you know, regardless of how that family is designed. You don't have to have, you know, mom, dad, brother, sister, brother, or anything like that. Just a family is a unit of love. And I want to challenge people, really, to just think before you speak. And, you know, I love her more than I could love anybody else in this entire world. And there's nothing like her, and I wouldn't take anything for her. So she is my daughter.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think that is the word that people use that is the most harmful, both to the child as well as to us, is when they say, I didn't realize she wasn't your real daughter. And the fact is that, you know, the reality of our love is just as real as it is for anyone else. And so that, I think, is probably the thing that people say the most, that is the most hurtful. And it's certainly just not intentional at all, but they say it a lot. And families are different now. Families are very different in all kinds of ways, shapes, and sizes, and ours is just one particular difference. And so it's really it's nice to talk to It's nice to have a platform like that, Shannon, and thank you for being a voice for those of us out there who are seeking international adoption and really helping to educate and support what people need to understand so that they can make our children feel better and schools can adapt differently now, which I know my child's has, when they do things like what's your heritage and what do you honor as far as holidays. And I know that there are challenges that happen all the time for kids who come from diverse backgrounds when sometimes school projects can be a real challenge because they're like, well, I don't know what my heritage is. What's my heritage? And, well, is it my, you know, is it my birth family or is it my chosen family or is it who is my heritage? That's a loaded question. And so I think, you know, like you described, educating ourselves, educating our children about what to say and what can help them is really important. So the dialogue is just huge.
It is. And, you know, I think it's also important to find, find a mentor or a support group. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're so instrumental in helping. I don't know what I would have done without my hot hens. I know you guys, those have heard me talk about them, but you need people to bounce these ideas and just to call and say, this is what happened today in the grocery store. How would you have handled it? And, you know, just to be able to, I have this situation going on with, you know, an extended family member. How would you handle this? Because, you know, we are talking about things that hurt us. So in turn, we don't want to lash back or hurt someone else to, as I would say, correct them or to help them understand better. And so that is one thing that I really, really am focusing on as Mrs. International. And so many things with adoption are, you know, cannot be publicized. You know, I can't publicize going to a pregnancy crisis center and talking to girls about their decisions and what, you know, not help them make a decision, but just listen to them. And if they ask for advice, give them advice and share with them what type of gift they are actually giving someone. And because, you know, sometimes they just think, oh, you know, would it really matter? Would somebody really want to adopt my baby? I mean, it's just amazing the things that you can do when you have a voice. But, yeah, I would definitely say support groups to help just to bounce these things off. And I know once I spoke with Katie for the first time, I was like, yes, my elephant mom, she gets me.
I knew that I would connect you guys and you would be that way. I have a question for you.
Now we're the roller coaster riders.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you, Shannon, with being Mrs. International, do you have an organization for adoption that you've aligned yourself with, speaking on their behalf?
Yes, it's the National Council for Adoption, and if anybody wants to look, you know, or read about them, it's adoptioncouncil.org is the website, and they remain the premier adoption advocacy group in the United States. They've been in service for 30 years, and the way I like to describe them is they're kind of, if you think about the United Way, you know, the United Way is kind of the umbrella for many, many organizations underneath, such as the Boys and Girls Club, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, American Red Cross, you know, what have you. There might be 20 organizations under a certain United Way. And NCFA is the same way. They support, first and foremost, children. They support adoptive families. They support birth families. They support women who are pregnant and trying to decide what's the best thing to do. They also work on a congressional level. I know the CEO, Chuck Johnson, is on a webcast today talking about the adoption tax. And I am so excited. I mean, I'm more thrilled at this than the night I won Mrs. International, I have to tell you, when I found out the other day that in December I'm going to get the opportunity to go with Chuck from National Council to of adoption. See, I can't even talk. I get so excited. I get tongue twisted. We're actually
say
going
it one more time.
Vietnam.
Okay, so in
yeah.
slow down for a second. No, I'm just kidding. In December, you're going
December,
where?
I'm going to Vietnam with the CEO of the National Council for Adoption. And because what's happening is, and this was one of my goals as Mrs. International, I said, I want to go to Vietnam. I want to be there when the country reopens. Because just to give you all a little history, if you haven't read our adoption story, we adopted Hallie Grace on September 1st of 2008. If you go to the USCIS website and do any kind of searching around, you'll see that date in bold. And that's the day that inter-country adoptions closed.
Yeah.
So there's talk, and there has been talk of trying to establish a new MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, between the two countries. And Vietnam is working on that, and it's supposed to take place in 2011. And obviously with anything where government's involved and red tape is hanging around, there has to be, everything has to be just finely tuned. And so I'm going to get the opportunity to go over with him and hope, as an adoptive parent of a child from an orphanage there in a very northern province, be able to tell, you know, how her life has changed and just yeah. be an advocate to reopen adoptions, because there are children languishing in those orphanages. And I just, it's hard to sleep at night knowing that, knowing, you know, what the type of conditions that she was adopted out of, and I'll tell you what it's about if you want to know. It's hard to sleep at night in a comfy bed knowing those babies are still there.
Well, that's, you know, that was going to be a point, and you guys are both going to have to forgive me if I ask this wrong, because I'm afraid I'm going to ask the wrong question.
No, don't
sorry,
be.
But
no.
Anyway, no. Do you think it's fair for me to be so completely fascinated by both of your children, wondering what they're going to grow up to be and do? Because you can just see their little personalities, you know, and Shannon, I can't see Hallie like I see Callie. You know,
isn't
I
that cool, Hallie and Callie?
Yeah,
really.
And they're just cute. But do you think it's fair for someone to think, gosh, you guys have rescued these two little girls?
You know,
is that a bad way to put that?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's bad for you to put it that way. I mean, I look at it in a different light. I look at it as how much she has blessed and rescued me. I mean, she made me a mom, and that was what I wanted to be for so. I mean, when you're a little girl, besides the times, you know, when I wanted to be a doctor and I cut my sister's baby doll's head off, you know, I played with dolls, and I wanted to be a mommy. I mean, that's what you want to do. You want to be a mom. I had names picked out, which, you know, that name, based on her situation, you all know her name has a special meaning. But I wanted to be a mom for so long, and so I look at it as she rescued me. She fulfilled my life and my dreams, and she completes us, and she's blessed our lives in so many ways. But, you know, what would her life be like had I don't know. I mean, when the day we adopted her, and another reason why support groups are so important is just telling people what they're getting into. I had no idea that they did not wear diapers in their orphanage. And so you can imagine my surprise when I got there and she already had, I think there were 8 babies on the bamboo mat, and they don't have diapers on. And I thought, wow. But you know, at that point, you just think, it doesn't matter. You're just loving on all of them. But that would have been really good to know. What I was walking into. But, you know, I don't know what her life would be like. She's such a smart little girl and such a loving little girl. I'm sure that, you know, she probably would have rescued some people or done something really great. But as far as what she's going to do in America, I honestly think she's going to be a plastic surgeon, you guys, because she's fascinated with body parts and she loves makeup.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Funny.
Yeah. So I don't know. Jason and I think, I guess they go through that age. You know, we're first-time parents, and so they go through that age where they, like we were on our way back from California on the plane, and she just, you know, out loud said something about the flight stewardess behind out loud, and I thought, oh, no, you got to be kidding me. And, you know, everybody laughed, but, yeah, so she hit that point, and she will do anything for makeup, anything. So
that sounds familiar.
She says,
yeah, that sounds very familiar. Mine's constantly doing that. You know, that's an excellent question, Elizabeth, and I think that
probably phrased wrong, but you get the drift.
No. I think it's beautiful because, you know, the person who came up and said, oh, you know, I just think what you've done is so wonderful, and I wonder, will she play the violin? You know, it was a beautiful sentiment of, wow, you know, you have done something wonderful for this little girl, which it's absolutely both ways, and we talk about that, but I am the mother who bawls her eyes out at everything in school, every performance, every anything, and it's always, it's not just, oh, I'm so proud that's my daughter, but it's also, oh, my God, she's getting to do something she never would have been able to do. And she's got such a beautiful spirit and talent and energy. We went to her pediatrician yesterday, and, you know, we were joking about the fact that her mind is working 100 miles an hour and her creativity is always on. And, you know, she would never have been able to do what she does here, ever. I mean, theater and dance and singing and all kinds of things in the same way. I mean, you know, maybe she could have done something.
Without overcoming major obstacles,
right. It would have been much more difficult. And I think about the way that she will impact the world because of the fact that she's getting the education and she's using these gifts and talents. And that, to me, is a gift that she's going to give the world that she wouldn't have otherwise gotten. So I think it's a really wonderful cycle when we do adopt internationally, that we're giving someone an opportunity who may do something very important in the world. And you know, I know that a lot of people say to us, why didn't you do it in the United States? Well, I'll tell you very simply, it would have been too painful. You know, it wouldn't have been 9 months. It would have been just too physically, emotionally draining. And it's not 9 months of pregnancy, you know, and it's not 4 days of labor. It's really difficult to go through the loss of having a child you love, whether it's in your body or out of your body, and losing them. And
okay, so I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back to the beginning for a minute here. And one thing that I wanted to address with both of you, if we can, for those listening. I'm not going to phrase this one right, so I'm just going to go
That's
for it.
Okay.
Again. Okay. Well, sometimes people adopt, there are all different reasons that people adopt children. One very common reason is the inability to have children. Your body just doesn't cooperate like you guys are saying and so forth. I'm a person who has had miscarriages, things like that. I have 4 children, but I mean, I had miscarriages and all of that. Can you say something to the women who are going through the process of my body's not cooperating?
Oh, yeah. I really want to honor those women out there because that is a silent loss. A lot of women miscarry and people say things and think that, oh, well, that's just common, that just happens. And, you know, what I want to say to them is honor that loss, even if other people don't. If you feel pain, feel it. And listen to that, because there may be something wrong. And don't wait and blow it off as if it's not important that you've miscarried, because sometimes there may be something wrong that can be fixed.
Go ahead.
Well, I know in my case it was endometriosis that went undiagnosed that could have been fixed. But even if it can't be fixed, it's really what I would say to all of them is if you believe in your heart and you want to be a mom, don't give up. But you may have to find other ways of doing it. But I think it's really important that anyone going through miscarriage honor the fact that for some women it's hard and painful and not something that should just be automatically blown off. Because a lot of people in their own discomfort of not knowing how to help someone do that. And my message to women out there is be true and honest and authentic and real about how it feels for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just to piggyback on that, I would say that, you know, sometimes it's not always miscarriages. Sometimes it's ending up at the hospital at 26 weeks with twins and mm-hmm. they don't make it. And that's extremely difficult. And, you know, my message to them would be like just what Katie said. Absolutely. I mean, you have to go through the grieving process. I didn't. I thought this didn't really happen. Let's just put this behind us. We'll just move on. We pretend it didn't happen because I don't think you know how to deal with it because you've already had how many miscarriages, Shannon? What's going on now? This didn't all happen. This is just a dream. And there comes a day you have to deal with it. And again, I mean, find somebody that you can talk to. There's so many women that are struggling and going through the things that you might be going through. And then don't look, you can't explain things to people until they happen. But I don't know how to put into words how beautiful adoption is. And, I mean, you know, I've heard it said before, adoption is simply another word for love. There's no way I could love another child the way I love Hallie Grace. And even though all those horrible things happen, and I know this sounds bad, but, I mean, I'm so glad they did because I wouldn't have her. And I cannot imagine. I mean, you know, she is my daughter, and I love her with every fiber of my being. And so everything happens for a reason. And this journey that you walk on, this roller coaster that you didn't even buy a ticket for, it's going to work out. It really works out the way it's supposed to. And somewhere, I mean, if I would have known, you know, 10 years ago when Jason and I got married that we were going to adopt the most beautiful little girl from a northern province in Vietnam and we were going to name her off of my reactions when we finally, you know, found her, which was hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. He said, we are not naming the child Hallelujah. And so that's where Hallie's from Hallelujah. Hallelujah, by God's grace, she's so divine. But if I would have known, or if I would have just seen, you know, just a glimpse of what the story would, you know, look like, maybe I could have saved a lot of that just pain. I mean, just pure pain.
Yeah.
But just know that everything happens for a reason, and your child is out there, and you may not, it may, you know, Katie knows that we worked with CCAI as well in the China program.
Mm.
You just don't know, but wherever your child, I mean, you will be united. It will happen. You just have to keep pressing forward.
You know, there's a beautiful, beautiful Chinese saying that they call the red thread. And the red thread of adoption, and it happened to us, where you meet someone who has adopted, and you all of a sudden in your heart you go, wow, maybe I'm meant to do that, and you start to ask that question. And you have met your red thread, and they believe that there's this invisible red thread that connects those of us who adopt from China. And when we were on our way home from China, we were in line in the San Francisco airport with Callie, and an individual kept staring at us, and he finally came up and spoke. And long story short, he had been thinking about adopting, he and his wife, and he ended up on our flight all the way to Pennsylvania from San Francisco. Now, the odds of that, who would have ever, you know? And he just was mesmerized by our daughter. Well, 6 months later, we get an email. We just adopted our red thread. And so, and it happened to, you know, it's just beautiful that there is this link of human beings who are just connected by this invisible red thread of adopting children, and they are just like any other child. They're full of promise and love and hope and energy and joy and pain in the neck and difficult and all kinds of stuff like any kid, you know. There's just no difference except they were born in our hearts. That's it.
That's right.
So you guys are never going to believe this. There's only 5 minutes left.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, there's only 5 minutes left. So we might have to schedule another call. But
we'll have to schedule another call.
I'm
going to
go back to all the pageants. What'd you say?
We'll have to schedule another talk.
Definitely will. Okay, so for all the pageant people listening, there's a whole pageant following going on. So number one question with pageants, we're going to just break from adoption for a minute and just go back to pageants.
Okay.
How do you interview in a pageant? That seems to be the number one question everybody always wants to know is, does the interview make or break a win? And how do you walk into a room and win those judges over and win that pageant? Total pageant question.
Well, for me, I would say yes. I think the interview is the make or breaker. And, you know, there were certain things I wanted the judges to know when I walked into Mrs. International. And I wanted them to see the qualities in me that would make me a great Mrs. International. And, I mean, just with talking to you guys and knowing you guys like I do, you know that I'm very approachable and I can relate to people of all ages, socioeconomic backgrounds. I think that I'm a great spokesperson. I mean, for adoption, I mean, hey, we represent the greatest love story of all time, and that's family, and I wanted them to know that. I also wanted them to know that I could feel a need. I mean, there are 500,000 children in the foster care system, and last count, 145+ million orphans around the world that need homes, and there's families that need completeness. And other things I wanted them to know is that I was determined to get my message across, and a message of hope and inspiring other women and other families to never give up on their dreams of building a family. And I also wanted them to, you know, not only see my passion, but to see my humor, too, because I want them to know I'm a real person. And,
you are funny.
You know, what you see is what, what you see is what you get. And, you know, I can't be anybody but Shannon. And I always make a joke because they'll say, Shannon Divine, and I'll be, oh, don't let the name fool you because I'm definitely not always divine. You know, I'm a real person. I put my pants on the same way everybody else does, and I zip my dress up the way everybody else does. You know, I just try to remain true to who I am, and I can tell you my faults before I can tell you my strengths. And I think that you have to look yourself in the mirror, and you have to say, who am I? Yeah, like this, 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 don't like this, this, and this, but that's okay because you're real and nobody's perfect and nobody's a perfect 10, and it's okay. You just have to go with who you are, and you've got to sell your heart in that interview room, and that's my advice.
And is that, are those goals, whether you're in an interview room or a job or a speaking engagement or whatever you're doing in life, are those things that translate for you across the board?
Absolutely, yes. In my job on a daily basis, I work in the medical community, and, you know, just being real with people, finding something that you can connect, you know, not going in saying, hey, I sell Symbis 1. It's great for your patients that can't, you know, have osteoarthritis, their knees are hurting, it's that time of year. I mean, they're totally blocked off. So if you go in and you make a personal connection with someone, and then you start to talk about what you are there to talk about. You just, and it's hard to teach someone how to be approachable. That's a really hard, you know, you can teach someone how to walk or how to stand in a pageant or what earring looks great, but it's really hard to teach someone that. And so I would just say practice makes perfect, even though there is no perfect. That's just a little line. But, you know, if you're wanting to compete at Mrs. International, and you're involved in the community, find ways to speak. The more you speak in public, the more you speak to groups of children, you know, talk to children. They're the critical ones. They'll get
you.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, they'll teach you how to speak fast. Yeah,
so
exactly.
Just a brief 90 seconds left. I want to make sure, Shannon, that you get in all your websites and so forth. If people want to follow your story of adoption, what's the website that they can go to that's your personal website?
Well, it's very simple, shannondivine.com.
And
then on, oh, I'm sorry, it's Shannon, S-H-A-N-N-O-N, and then Divine is D with the E, V-I-N-E.com, so shannondivine.com. And on there, there's a link that says follow our blog, and you can go back to 2008 where I started the blog, and you can read it all if you're bored one night. And also on that blog, the Little Miss Magic or Our Divine Miracle, there's a link at the top. There's a photo of Jason and I and Hallie Grace the night I won Mrs. International. And it'll say, follow my year as Mrs. International, and that will take you to the international blog. But you can also Google my name and probably find a lot of stuff, too.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on our show today, everyone. Mrs. International, Shannon Divine. And Katie. Oh, you're so welcome. We love you, and we're following you. And with 15 seconds left to go, join us next week for Sue Jakes, the Civility CEO. She's going to tell us what double dippers really mean. Right, Katie?
Yep.
And
all right, you guys, have a good day.
Yep. Have
Bye,
your best
Thank
ever
you.
Day.
Bye.
Bye.